Welcome to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. This is a recording from the monthly Oldie Literary Lunch at the National Liberal Club. To book a ticket, please go to www.theoldie.co.uk/lunches.
Our next speaker is one of our leading writers, particularly about nature. Adam Nicholson has written The Seabird's Cry and Sea Room, but he's also written God's Secretaries, The Making of the King James Bible, and The Mighty Dead about Homer. He is the grandson of the writers Vita Sackville-West and Sir Harold Nicholson, thus in writing a terrific book, Sissinghurst, An Unfinished History. And his new book is Bird School, A Beginner in the Wood. Ladies and gentlemen, Adam Nicholson.
Thank you very much. Well, this is lovely to be here, and thank you very much for having me. I was last here 10 years ago, I think, talking about Sissinghurst. And I was so greatly looking forward to this lovely lunch, but then I had the awkward experience on arrival of meeting and talking to the great Peter York, who's sitting here. Peter. I said, I've written a book about birds in the wood at home in Sussex. And Peter said, all very good, I suppose, but I'm not interested in nature. Will you own up to that? Yes, he does. Good. Anyway, that really, funnily enough, is exactly what my book is about. That for most of my life, I mean, the great editor says that I'm a nature writer, but actually I spent most of my life writing about literature and history. And for most of it, have really paid very little attention to the birds around us. And I remember I was making a radio programme a few years ago with a great friend of mine, a birder, about Homer. We were on the plain of Troy. I'm sure Noble Caledonia sails there, does it? I'm sure it parks off Troy. And I was blathering away into his woolly microphone, as one does. His name for me was Signor Waffle. Signor Waffle. Waffling away. Anyway, and he said, Adam, there's a woodlark singing above you. And I said, yes, very good. So I went on about Homer, Achilles, and a lark above. No, not a lark, a woodlark, Adam. So I said, yes, and so here on the plain of Troy, the larks are singing. And I remember his face, a sort of total disenchanted impatience with the idiocies of people who don't care about nature, Mr. York. Because, as you all know, not caring about nature is exactly what has led to one of our current catastrophes. Nature is in the most terrible condition. 60% of all wild vertebrate animals have died in the last 50 years. And the graph is still heading downwards. And really the root of that destruction has been the kind of attitudes that the great Mr. York embodies. Do you want to? You could have a moment of answering this if you like. You could have 3 of my minutes. No, not now. Not. I'm sure you know this man. He can't be kept down. Quiet for now. Is that all right? Good. Yeah. Anyway, so I felt reproached by my friend. I'd written a book about seabirds, as Harry has said, and seabirds are very easy to know, aren't they? Those of us who have been on probably Noble Caledonia trips. They're big, loud, heraldic, obvious, they don't mind you. But the birds in the wood, or the birds in the garden, or the birds in the fields, they fly away if you look at them. And actually some very good science has been done about this, that birds hate being looked at. Did you know that? Especially looked at with two eyes. If you hold a hand over one eye, you can get much, much closer to a bird. For the one very good reason that two eyes The two eyes are the eyes of the predator. They're the eyes that can triangulate them, pounce on them and get them. And so I decided the way to do something about this was to build a hide. Most people say, you know, if you're interested in birds, get a pair of binoculars. But actually a pair of binoculars, it's incredibly distant. I mean, by definition, distant. And in fact, a hide is the way to be as close to them as you all are to me here now. So I built a hide in the wood at home, a very nice hide, up on stilts. So it was up in the trees rather than sort of down on the ground. About as big in floor plan as one of these tables. And in the walls of it, it was octagonal, I built a series of nest boxes. But with the key thing that the nest boxes, their inside wall, the wall that faced into the hide, was made of glass with a little door on each of them so that I could actually inspect the birds nesting. And I went there this morning just to check before coming here. There are 18 baby birds currently in my hide. So it looks rather like an observatory, this building in the wood. But I've called it in the book, not an observatory, not a thing to sort of inspect the lives of animals, but an absorbatory, a place you can sit in and soak it up. And that really is what, apart from being an attack on Peter York, the book is about the absorbency of a true attitude to the natural world. Don't impose, let it come, be with it, see what it means, see what it has to tell you. And so I sat in there the first morning in January a couple of years ago, and I was sitting in there thinking, yes, well, here I am to absorb. And suddenly, right next to me, inside the birdhouse, appeared a wren. A wren on my table, on my desk, just there like that, dancing around. Because I'm sure you'll know, you're all great naturalists here, aren't you? Yes. Anyway, the wrens like to hide from cold weather because they're so small. They very easily die in cold weather. I mean, huge wren deaths every winter. I mean, 40, 50, 60% of wrens die in a cold winter. And so wrens come in, and John Clare, the great Northamptonshire poet, used to write about wrens living in his shepherd's hut when he was a shepherd as a boy in early 19th century Northamptonshire. And so the wren had come in and was dancing around me and living with me and surviving because of my shed. So I became very, very intrigued by the life of the wren. And wrens die terribly in winters, but the reason there are still so many wrens, there are 11 million wren territories in England, the reason is that they are absolutely driven by lust. There is no more lustful creature in the natural world. And the way that they... have I run out of time? The way that they make their lust effective in the world is that the male wren, every early spring, March, goes around his little territory, 1.5 acres odd, something like that, building lots and lots of nests, maybe 7, 8, 9, 10 different nests scattered around his territory. He then finds a Mrs. Wren floating by, or Miss Wren probably at that stage, and says to her, "Look, I've made some marvellous nests. Would you come here?" And he introduces her and sings outside the nest and says, "Would you like this one? Or there's one over there that I could show you." There's a very nicely made one over in that bush there. And after a while, she chooses one and then quite literally feathers the nest. So she chooses nest 5, say. And Mr. Wren, very happy, they do what everyone needs to do to fertilise eggs, and she starts laying them in nest 5. Mr. Wren, his spring is not over. He then finds another wren, Miss Wren, and says, I've got lovely nests. There are six, in fact. There's one, two, three, four, and six. Can I show you? And so she then chooses one, two, and as a result, the wren population, having sunk terribly in the winter, booms every spring. That's... Harry, tell me if I'm done.
One more minute.
So, that's the kind of thing, in other words, the knowledge that these creatures have, rich, complex, fascinating, various, independent lives all around us, that the book I've written is about. That it is actually an incredible sort of realm of richness surrounding us, which I and Peter have ignored forever. So thank you very much. Thank you.
You have been listening to Radio Aldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. Why not get 3 trial issues of the Aldie magazine for just £1? Sure you'll enjoy it. We'll then charge you £25.75 for every 6 issues. Just go to checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter old trial as one word in capitals. That's checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter old trial.